Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everybody and welcome to this La Liga Match Day 20 recap. This is the La Liga Lowdown podcast, rebroadcast on Sirius XMFC 157, and I'm your host, Ewan McTeer. We'll be hearing from our correspondents around Spain as we cover this really exciting weekend of La Liga action. And first of all, we'll start with Barcelona-based Roman de Arquer to discuss new Barca coach Quique Setién's first game in charge.
Messi activa Griezmann, Griezmann a Arturo, el tercer Arturo, Messi ha rematado.
¡Gol!
There has been a change in the Barcelona dugout, but one thing that hasn't changed, and that's the fact that Leo Messi is still the one putting the ball in the back of the net. His strike to finish a lovely team move was the only goal of the game as Barcelona defeated Granada 1-0 on Sunday night. We've got Roman here now, and Roman, tell us about the changes that Setién did make for this debut.
Well, I think there are three things worth pointing out in Quique Setién's debut as a Barcelona manager. First of all, the formation. It was a 4-3-3, something we've seen very often with Valverde, but it was actually a variable formation. Because in attack, you would see that the team would switch into a 3-5-2 with Umtiti, Pique, and surprisingly, Sergi Roberto at the back, whereas Alba would join in towards the midfield, wide open to the left. The other thing I saw which changed in terms of Valverde is the possession and the passes. Way more control. And in this game, in Setién's first game as a Barca manager, the team already managed 921 passes, which is quite impressive. This means that Barca would defend better because they would have the ball, of course, more often. And Granada really struggled to create any opportunities because of this. And finally, the third aspect I saw in Quique Setién's game was the high pressure. The players were really quickly trying to recover the ball in attack. As a matter of fact, the goal was because of that. They stole the ball up in attack after a high pressure, and that really worked very well. And those were the three keys, I think, to Quique Setién's first little revolution.
And what about Setién himself? How did he experience this game from the sidelines?
He seemed quite calm from the sidelines, but you could kind of tell that he was a bit tense there, you know, because the team wasn't scoring. It was struggling to find that goal, and as minutes were going by, the pressure was building up. And I was surprised he took so long to make his first sub, bringing in Riqui Puig until the 71st minute. But once he got that goal, it was a clear relief for him. He threw his arms into the air. He was very happy that happened, and a lot of pressure was taken off his shoulders. And from there on, he was more relaxed, we could say. But overall, it was his debut in a big, big team such as Barcelona, so you can understand that it's always a very tense a game for someone that's debuting that way.
Sergio Busquets had a central role, didn't he? He had plenty of confidence, I thought, in this one.
I definitely think Busquets was one of the best players of the game, no doubt. I mean, most of the balls were going through his feet. I think he was dictating the tempo of this game, in my opinion. He was essential, honestly. And usually with Valverde, we saw how he tended to go between the center backs to bring the ball out from the back. And he had maybe more of a defensive role. But in this case, he was more participative in attack, which is something we would see more with Guardiola when he was managing Busquets. And I kind of felt that similarity. And of course, he was participating more offensively, helping the team to generate the occasions from the midfield. And also, it has to be said, he was great when it came to tackling and then recovering the ball and pressing high. And also a lot of confidence in terms of the dummies he would try and how he would hide the ball from the rival. So great game from Busquets, and you can tell he's got a lot of confidence from Quique Setién going on forward.
Lots of Barcelona fans were demanding more minutes for Riqui Puig, and Setién delivered in his very first match by bringing him on as a sub. How did he do? And do you think Quique Setién will keep counting on Riqui Puig?
There was a lot of talk about Riqui Puig, whether he was going to get his minutes finally with Quique Setién, because Valverde obviously didn't count on him as much as lots of fans would have wanted, and he finally got that opportunity, and I think he did pretty well, to be honest. He was actually crucial in the goal, because the recovery he made up really high in the pitch allowed Barca to get that much-needed first goal and only goal of the game, so credit to him for that. You could tell he wasn't risking too much, of course. You know, he needs to build up his confidence, especially playing with the first team. But, I mean, he had a really positive performance. And if he keeps playing at this level, I'm sure he's going to get more minutes. And as a matter of fact, after the game, he spoke to the press and he told them that he is going to continue playing with Barça B. But if he plays well and if he trains well with Quique and catches their eye, then he's going to get more minutes. And he seemed very happy at the moment with Quique Setién and how things are going. So he'll surely get more opportunities along this season.
What about Granada? They didn't really seem to have an answer to Barcelona's constant control.
Yeah, it was a tough game for Granada because, I mean, Barcelona had the ball so much and they weren't really finding solutions or being capable of bringing the ball forward without losing it, because also Barca was pressing very high and very quickly. So it was very complicated for them. They weren't really even managing any or barely any counterattacks, and they struggled a lot. They looked nothing like the Granada we saw back at their home stadium, where they played really well. And of course, in front of your fans, you have more confidence, and the Camp Nou is a very big and imposing stadium, so I can understand they're not going to provide the same performance. Also, they had a really good run back then. They were in better form. Now they're struggling a bit more. So it was a tough game for them, and it got even tougher when Germán Sánchez got sent off. That second yellow card being quite harsh, in my opinion. I think the referee didn't really need to go and take it that far, because it was a simple foul quite far away from the Granada's area. So it was quite unnecessary, in my opinion.
Thank you, Roman. That win for Barcelona means that they stay top of the table, joint top with Real Madrid. Both those sides are on 43 points after Real Madrid also won a home game against an Andalusian team by one goal. They took on Sevilla at the Bernabeu on Saturday afternoon. Sevilla had lost their past 12 matches at the Bernabeu, and it's now 13, but it wasn't easy for Real Madrid. Sevilla had a Luke de Jong goal, quite controversially disallowed in the first half, for a foul on Eder Militao, who was de Jong's marker in the build-up. Then in the second half, Casemiro scored twice and De Jong got another, although the goal that did stand for him could actually have been ruled out too for a handball in the build-up, so maybe the officiating controversy for Sevilla evened out. For Real Madrid, they're just glad to get this win, considering they were missing a bunch of players like Sergio Ramos, Fede Valverde, Eden Hazard and Karim Benzema, who couldn't start and who only came on in the second half. They're still joint top, they're still enjoying 2020. One team that is not enjoying 2020, though, is Real Sociedad. The attacking football of the Basque side has dried up a little in recent weeks, and they've started 2020 with a 2-1 home loss to Villarreal and then a 3-0 defeat away at Real Betis this weekend. Our Real Betis man David Whitworth was there, and David, once again, Joaquin was great in this one, even scoring the second goal. How is he able to have so much success in this Betis system?
Well, Joaquin continues to belie his age. It's amazing the season that he's having. He scored his 7th goal in 19 games recently against Real Sociedad. And I think the key to his success is the position he's playing now. He's not that winger anymore. Yes, he will be on the wing in some games, but Ruby's pushed him further forward and given him the freedom to connect more with the striker, be it Borja Iglesias or Lauren. He's much more in the centre. He doesn't have to run as much. He just knows where the space is. Typical striker like Teddy Sheringham in his days. Didn't have a lot of pace, but just had a great footballing brain, and that's exactly what Joaquin has. He knows where the space is, he knows where he needs to be, he knows the runs, he knows he just has to be economical with the way he moves himself nowadays, and it's just a case of right place, right time, and the timing is now for him. Fantastic season he's having, but it's all to do with his positioning.
So many teams have struggled against Real Sociedad's attack this season. Not only did Real Betis beat them, but they kept a clean sheet. How did they do that?
I believe the key to keeping at bay Real Sociedad's attack was our solidity. I think the defence has improved a lot, especially a player that's come through our ranks, Edgar, is one to watch out for. Looking very, very confident and assured on the ball. Made his debut against Valencia just before Christmas and fit right in. And just that assuredness and tranquility on the field is helping the whole team when he plays. And it's not just him. You can see the whole team are much more confident with the formation that Ruby wants from them, from the style of play that he wants from them, from his attacking philosophy. The penny's finally dropped, I think, with this team. And although the results have not shown it, because Betis have only won once in four La Liga games, you can see that visibly the players know exactly where they need to be. They look more solid. They look like a team. And it's finally coming to fruition. And I think those were the reasons, plus the fast start that we made, really gave Real Sociedad no chance. Hardly any chances in the whole game apart from Mikel Merino's fantastic halfway effort shot that nearly beat Joel Robles, who a fantastic save from the goalkeeper to keep him from scoring that amazing goal.
We got to see Real Betis' January signings, Carlos Alenia and Guido Rodriguez in this one. How did they look?
In terms of Alenia, well, he made his home debut in the recent game against Real Sociedad, and you could see already he's going to bring a lot of quality to that middle of the part of the field. Some nice passing play, nice quality, linking up play, very creative player. He's going to fit right in with what Ruby's trying to do with his attacking philosophy. In terms of Guido Rodriguez, he made a cameo appearance, 20 minutes to go, but you could see already his battled, hardened type of defensive midfielder qualities that we've been sorely missing. We've been playing William Carvalho there, but really we should play him more an attacking threat. So in terms of that position, that's been a position that we've been really needing, and the signing of Guido Rodriguez from Club America, I'm sure, is going to help us again get that stability, get that equilibrium between the defence and the attack.
Thanks for that insight, David, from the Estadio Benito Villamarín. We've already discussed some of the tastiest fixtures we had this weekend, but we've got plenty more where that came from, as we had several shock results in La Liga. We'll dive into them after this short break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello and welcome back to this match day recap as we look back on the 20th round of the 2019-20 La Liga season. It's a round that Valencia will be hoping to forget as they went away to struggling Mallorca and lost 4-1. I was there on the island to see this one, and so too was La Liga Lowdown's Alex Fitzpatrick. After the match, which was played in a downpour that I wasn't quite expecting, Alex and I huddled under some cover outside the ground and discussed one of Real Mallorca's biggest results in a long time, the first time they scored 3 goals in the first half of a La Liga match since 2009. Mallorca, Mallorca, oh Mallorca, stand up, y siempre dirá, oh Mallorca, no hay ningún.
So I'm here outside Somosh with Alex Fitzpatrick to talk about Real Mallorca's 4-1 win against Valencia. Valencia were really poor. They were second to every ball. They were sluggish. It almost looked like they didn't want to be there in the rain, in the early kickoff. What else was behind this win, though, for Real Mallorca? What did Real Mallorca do to really frustrate Valencia?
I think the big thing tactically that Vicente Moreno did, and this is the first time this season that he's done it, is he went 4-4-2. Cucho Hernandez now available, fit, ready, and has obviously been training with the club since November. He was up top with Ante Budimir, and that meant that Mallorca were compact in defence with those two banks of four, but also they could break forwards, spring forwards when they won the ball in midfield, and get the ball up to Ante Budimir, who wasn't isolated. We've seen him at times this season quite isolated, all up there by himself, and there was the ability for him to have some fantastic interplay with both Cucho Hernandez and with the wingers with that formation.
And you talk about the fantastic interplay. There were some really nice moves from Mallorca, especially the third goal. How nice was that for Mallorca fans to see some nice, good attacking football and goals from open play?
This is a team that can play football, and I think for the vast majority of this season they've been quite limited due to the approach that they've had, and obviously the step up in level, and they've focused more on making sure that they're competitive, working hard, being compact, and less so on some of the attractive football that they played last year. Today they really, really played to their strengths, which is winning the ball back quickly and then springing a quick counter-attack, and having the bodies forward around Ante Budimir to be able to do that makes all the difference. And it was reminiscent at times of things that we saw from them last season: good interplay and then getting quick shots away, which ultimately is leading to goals.
It was a bit reminiscent as well of some of the other games that we've had in the rain in Mallorca, and they've done quite well under the rain. You can probably hear it in the background, the drops on top of the umbrella where we're recording outside the stadium. Why is it Real Mallorca, a team that has sun most days of the year, actually do really well when it starts raining at Somosh?
Yeah, earlier on in the season, Villarreal visited Somosh, and it was another day like today, raining cats and dogs. And looking into the eyes of the Villarreal players as they were coming out, and it was a little bit the same with Valencia, stood in the tunnel waiting to warm up. They didn't fancy it. You could see that there were sideways glances looking at each other. But you know that this Real Mallorca team, they will play rain, they will play in snow, they'll play in any conditions, and they will always give the same level of effort, and they will not allow that to affect them. The coaching staff will not allow that. So I think that did slightly play to Real Mallorca's advantage. Also, the conditions, I think, in the first few minutes did affect both sides. There were a number of minor errors in the opening couple of minutes, and I think Mallorca adapted better to those conditions, got the head in front and got the early goals, and that really closed out the game.
The Dani Parejo red card, I don't think it was a red card. It was very unfortunate, I think, for Danny Parejo. But at the same time, I don't really think it influenced the result too much. What were your thoughts on the red card?
The referee set his stall out in the first half very early. Both Coquelin and Danny Parejo picked up yellow cards. And when both of your central midfielders are on yellow cards from very, very early in the game, that is always going to be dangerous. And I actually think that that is part of what helped Real Mallorca to take a hold of the game and grasp a little bit of control in that midfield. Mallorca turned 60-40s against into 50-50s and almost sometimes into 60-40s in their favour. They will always put their foot in, and that meant that the two of them in the central midfield were running, walking a tightrope to be able really to make the game without picking up a second yellow. They were fairly soft yellows, but the referee decided to pull him up for them, and I think it was a little bit naive of Parejo to go in for that second challenge.
So that was my chat with Alex about a great day for Real Mallorca and a terrible one for Valencia fans like our own Paco Pollitt. We're not going to put Paco through the pain of reflecting on that defeat today. Instead, I want to get his thoughts on fellow Valencian side Levante and their 1-0 home loss to Alaves. Paco, watching this one, did you get the sense that this was a match between two teams who are still in the relegation battle?
Unfortunately, yes. Because of the sheer levels of fear and panic both teams had towards not picking up points, especially in the first half. But I have to say, the scoreboard was actually pretty unfair for Alaves because they kept piling up incredible chances to score in the last 30 minutes. Aitor was obviously great, but I think Alaves are struggling to score this season, and besides Lucas Perez, they don't really have a player that has that different flavor to spice up the offense. Regarding Levante, I have little to say. They had an awful game, and fans left the stadium very, very angry with the display shown by their men.
You mentioned that Levante goalkeeper Aitor Fernandez once again had to be very good. That's nothing new, is it?
Yes, well, Aitor Fernandez was crucial towards not seeing a 3 or 4 goal difference at the end of the game. And in that sense, this isn't really news, because he's been Levante's best player this season, consistently right next to striker Roger Martí. But it actually speaks very well about the work Alaves put towards increasing their attacking presence. With 21 goals scored to date, they are the 6th worst team in the league in that stat. So I think they must keep going at it and working on it, because it will eventually pay off.
Alex Vidal scored the winning goal for Alaves, the only goal of the game, but he was in the news recently for some controversial comments about Asier Garitano. Can you explain this to us?
Yes, it's a bit tricky, you know. 2 weeks ago, after Alaves couldn't beat Real Betis, who were one man down, Alex Vidal criticised his coach with not much subtlety in the flash interview post-game. He literally said that when the opposition is down to 10 men, you must try to generate more chances, and that doing that is very difficult when your subs are defensive players rather than offensive. That criticism didn't sit well with Asier Garitano or with Alaves fans, who heavily slammed Alex Vidal in the following days for such disrespect. However, you fast forward 2 weeks later, and after scoring the game winner against Levante, Vidal was much more confident when speaking after the match. He apologized publicly for what he said. He explained that he had already done it towards his coach and teammates earlier in private, and he stated that he was very happy after scoring his second goal in a row. So, case closed.
Thanks, Paco. Let's go now to the Basque Country to talk to Dan Parry about the games that were taking place there this weekend. Firstly, Dan, let's talk about Athletic Club versus Celta Vigo. Rafinha put Celta Vigo ahead, and then Raul Garcia equalised from the penalty spot to make it 1-1. And having watched this and seen how many chances were created, especially that one for Santi Mina, I want to know how there were only 2 goals in this game.
I'm really not sure. There were so many chances in the game, but neither side were able to put any of their opportunities away. So yeah, mostly down to unbelievably sloppy finishing. But I think Santi Mina wins the award for the worst missed chance with his one though.
Which team is happier with the point, or are they both disappointed? Because both teams probably feel they could have won it.
I think that Celta Vigo would definitely be happy with the point. In my opinion, they came looking for a draw. Their game plan was to set out to frustrate Athletic, and they were successful in doing that. Yeah, and the game really actually highlighted some flaws which we've been speaking about in terms of Athletic now for quite a while, especially in their attacking play. They're really lacking that clinical edge. And again, they couldn't score from a corner, even though today they had 13 corners and still didn't manage to score a goal. So you can probably tell by the tone in my voice that Athletic were not happy with the fact that we didn't manage to win.
Yeah, I can tell. The other big game in the Basque Country this weekend was Eibar's win against Atletico Madrid. They started so well and had several early chances from set pieces before Esteban Burgos, Eibar's fifth-choice centre-back, scored the opener. Eibar then held on and got a second in the final minute through Edu Exposito for the 2-0 win. How did they pull this off?
Yeah, that was an absolutely massive result for Eibar, and it takes them even further away from the relegation zone because it was looking a bit sketchy for a while. And quite simply, they wanted the game more. They seemed more up for the fight than Atletico. Truth is, Ecuador is a very difficult place to play. Eibar, this time of year, it's freezing cold. They're playing at night. Eibar are a team that likes to get in your face. They press up high. It's a challenge for any team, and that's why they keep taking big scalps like this one. Great result for them.
Thanks, Dan. We'll see if Eibar can stay up. It was a good result for them this weekend, but they weren't the only ones of the relegation threatened teams to have a good result. We've already heard about Real Mallorca's win and Alavés's win. Osasuna and Real Valladolid, meanwhile, they drew 0-0 this weekend, and I'm afraid the less said about that match between them, the better, as there weren't all that many chances in this one. But both those sides do pick up a useful point. Then we also had the win for Espanyol, who still remain bottom of the table, but only just. They went away to Villarreal, not an easy place to go, and they won 2-1. The man scoring the goal that turned out to be the winner was Raúl de Tomás, their new January signing. This means that Espanyol's new coach Abelardo has earned a draw against Barcelona and a win against Villarreal in his first two La Liga matches in charge. Not bad at all. The only team in the bottom eight that did lose this weekend was Leganés. Leganés. They'd been going so strong under their new coach Javier Aguirre, but they were terrible on Friday night in their derby against Getafe. In the biggest match of the season for the supporters, they were 3-0 down at halftime to their bitter rivals, and that remained the final score. I was there for this one, and that meant I got to see the Alan Neom show.
Neom is the player making way.
So imagine that it's some kind of physical problem. I don't know if he's injured, because otherwise...
Well, it's either a physical problem or poor the lass thinks that Neom is too...
He wants to protect him.
He's too wound up and he's already been booked and...
It's another option to understand that maybe it's too late with a yellow card, with all the pressure of Leganés supporters, he preferred to change that. And some minutes for Etebo.
What you heard there was a commentary as Getafe's Alan Neom was subbed off in the 31st minute. The La Liga TV commentators thought it might be an injury, and everyone else in the press box at the time thought the same, but it wasn't a physical issue. Neom was taken off because he was far too excited about this match. He played for Leganés last season, then left for their rivals Getafe in the summer, and then let out all his anger in this game, scoring the second goal and celebrating in front of the Leganés fans, and then also in front of the Getafe fans. He was too pumped up, and José Bordalás took him off, even admitting that this was the reason after the game. Moments after Neom went off, Getafe scored their third goal, and he ran back on the pitch in his puffy jacket to celebrate again. He had a lot of fun, and he might as well, as his side won 3-0 to leave Leganés in 19th place and on the same number of points as Espanyol with 14. Celta Vigo on 16 points remain the other team currently in the relegation zone. That brings us then to the end of our Match Day 20 recap. As always, I've been your host, Drew McTeer, and my thanks go out to all our contributors, to Roman de Arcaire, to David Whitworth, to Alex Fitzpatrick, to Paco Pollitt, and to Dan Parry. And of course, my thanks to you for listening. Until next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.